The threat of nuclear war hangs over our lives as news of rising unemployment continues to make the headlines. On-the-job pressures, marital discord, the death of a loved one, or just living life in the fast lane can all contribute to stress. Of the six leading causes of death in the U.S. today, stress is now known to be a major contributor. What is stress and how can it be managed on the job and in our homes for more enjoyment of life? I'm Michelle Lassay Montgomery for George Mason University, the State University in Northern Virginia. My guest is Dr. Eric Gopleroo, professor of psychology at George Mason University. And today we're going to talk about coping with stress. Welcome to Frankly Speaking, Dr. Gopleroo.
Hello.
Stress has been linked to coronary heart disease, cancer, lung ailments, accidental injuries, cirrhosis of the liver, and suicide. Six of the leading causes of death in the U.S. today. What exactly is stress?
Well, stress is really fairly difficult to define. Sometimes we think of stress as outside things that happen to us, the loss of a loved one, pressures on the job. But psychologists have taken to looking at stress as a reaction of the organism, a reaction of the individual to external or internal effects. The first reaction of the organism to a stress, whether it's an internal, an emotional reaction, or an external event, is fight flight. Now, the best example for that is if you're driving on 495 and somebody comes and cuts you off driving 70 miles an hour, the immediate reaction that you have, your heartbeat starts pounding, you get sweat in the back of your hands, you get real tense, you might find that you're breathing faster, that your stomach is all butterflies. That's the fight-flight reaction. If an organism remained in a stressed situation, highly aroused, he moved into the second stage, which is the resistance phase. Think of yourself on 495 in a traffic jam. Horns are blaring, you're worried that your car is going to overheat, you're late to an appointment, and instead of your system calming down after a minute or two, instead it stays up there. And you're upset, you're nervous, your stomach is grunching away. You may find that you've got pains across your neck, you get a headache, you may get indigestion, you may find yourself cursing and rolling down the window and yelling at other drivers. This would be the resistance phase, where the organism is using all of the techniques that it has to cope with the stress.
That's coping.
That's coping. And that's the place where things that we can do and what we can talk about later come into place. If we ineffectively deal with the stress, or the stress has overwhelmed our ability to cope, as in when some very traumatic disorder occurs or when we're in a long period of stresses, then we move into the third phase called exhaustion. In the exhaustion phase for people, we develop such things as migraine headaches, heart attacks, some of us die.
Is it more pervasive now than ever before?
I think that we've become more sophisticated in paying attention to it. I see on the news racks that Time Magazine, Newsweek, Psychology Today have all featured stories on stress. I think that we've gotten a lot better at paying attention to stress, and also we've developed some technologies to deal with it. So it's better. I think one of the reasons that we've gotten sensitive to stress is that we actually have something that we can do about it. When we can't do anything about it, why pay attention to it?
What part does lifestyle play on stress, such as thrill-seeking, for example?
Well, I think that lifestyle is extremely important. It's important in a couple of ways. One is that researchers have found that the more changes that a person has to go through, adaptation to environmental changes that a person goes through, the greater the likelihood that they will develop physical or emotional problems. So that if you change jobs and also move to a new place and have new friends, lose old friends, change your normal routines, change your economic lifestyle, all those things that are associated with, say, starting a new job, retiring, first child, divorce,
marriage,
starting college. Okay, all of those things, a change in the lifestyle requires a lot of adaptation. It's difficult to get back to normal if you're gone through a lot of stresses. So in that sense, a lot of stresses or a lot of changes in one's lifestyle may be related to stress. Another part, though, of lifestyle may be that some people kind of impose changes on themselves. This is most well known in the type A, type B personality style, which there's been a lot written about recently.
Now, the type A style is what kind of person?
Well, that's the kind of person who, when they see a line for tickets at the movie theater, will walk by rather than wait in line. They're the kind of person who, if they come to a red light, will start cursing the light because they can't wait. They're a person who may find themselves growing very frustrated when someone is talking slowly, and they may want to hurry them along or finish their sentences. A type A person is someone who's very competitive, time-pressured, sets deadlines on themselves, rushes.
And the type B?
Type B is somebody who's, perhaps if you put not in front of all those other phrases, somebody who can look at events, look at stresses, and say, well, maybe I ought to go fishing and think about it for a while.
So the type B person is your laid-back person, basically.
Right. Now, the reason that this is important is that there have been several studies, the most notable one done by Rosenhan and Friedman, which have looked at the relationship between heart attack and type A, type B personality. The type A person, the hard-driving person, is far more likely to have a heart attack and far more likely to have a fatal heart attack than is a type B person. This is another place where lifestyle can have a significant impact on health and emotional well-being.
Let's talk about the job. It's been said that stress costs business an average of $100 billion in lost revenues alone. What are some on-the-job symptoms of stress?
The symptoms of stress most often found on the job have been variously labeled as burnout or alienation. You find people not coming into work, lots of illnesses, flu, bugs that aren't clear what they are, increased drinking, more complaints, on-the-job accidents are associated with high stress. Now, one of the ways we know that this is associated with high stress is when stress management programs have been instituted in business. We found Kennecott Copper, for example, a large industrial firm, instituted a stress management program. They found that they got, on the average, of a $3 reduction in health care costs for every dollar that they put into stress management. Other companies have also found that when they instituted stress management programs, the number of accidents that they had, the number of days off related to alcohol problems, the number of days off for physical complaints, the amount of medical procedures, surgical procedures used, goes way, way down compared to well-controlled samples where utilization has gone up when there isn't treatment.
Is good management key to combating stress in the workplace?
I think good management is critical. We have found that there are a number of factors associated with on-the-job stress. If you've got two bosses who are telling you contradictory things, the worker is stuck in the middle. If a person who is spanning a boundary, a shop steward or a foreman, who is in between workers and management is a person who's in a position of stress. A person who has a lot of responsibility but very little control is under a lot of stress. The air traffic controllers, for example, have been studied very extensively. It's been found that air traffic controllers have a lot of responsibility for those little blips on the screen, but they don't have any control over whether those airplanes miss or not. That lack of control is related to high levels of stress and then stress-related physical and emotional problems. Think about when you're driving in the car, okay, and some nut cuts you off on 495. Okay, that's stressful for you if you're the driver. But now put yourself in the passenger seat. Think about how long you're stressed when somebody cuts off and the driver's reacting. You don't have control over what the person does. It's likely that the stress lasts longer. And stress management programs on the job that try to change the job to give the workers more control, more responsibility over their workplace, have had a big impact on reducing the stress and emotional problems, physical problems, in those work sites.
Being in control of one's life is very significant, but how can an individual do this, say, in his or her personal life and on the job? What are some techniques?
Okay, there are some that are very common and well known, various relaxation techniques. Almost all of us have some kind of technique for getting out our frustration. Some people pull weeds, others go and take long walks. Engaging in some kind of physical exercise is useful. Being fit, of course, helps. A person who is at high risk for having diabetes, which has some stress component, or hypertension, would do well to modify their diet in a way so that they're not overweight, they're not eating a lot of salt, taking a lot of caffeine, that sort of thing. Relaxation, whether it's meditation and Silva mind control, all of those things which help reduce our anxiety and help us gain some control over our physiological arousal are important. I think one of the things that's critical and that is not talked about so much is how we perceive stresses and what we do to add additional stress and strain on ourselves. Now think about, again, the traffic incident. If your perception of that is, I've got to react real quick, then you react and it's all over. Now, I know a guy who, when somebody cuts him off or does something like that on an automobile, feels that it's his God-given responsibility to go and teach that person a lesson. I don't know if you've ever driven with anyone like this. It's a little frightening. He is doing something in his own head which is keeping him and his passengers highly aroused. We say that that person should not have cut me off. And since he did, he is an awful person and I'm going to punish him. If you find yourself getting really angry, really frustrated, you might think, what am I saying to myself that's adding added emphasis? And it generally is in terms of he, she, it shouldn't have done that or should have. We look for shoulds, oughts, musts, got to, have to, shouldn't. Those are the kind of words that we say to ourselves that add a lot of stress to ourselves.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Gaplerud, for being on Frankly Speaking. We've been talking about coping with stress, and my guest has been Dr. Eric Gaplerud, professor of psychology at George Mason University. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University. For information about our guest or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Michelle Lassane Montgomery for George Mason University, the state university in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.